And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
So you're telling me it's my turn? This is an awful lot of pressure to put on one guy from New Jersey. But I guess I asked for it. Welcome to a Tuesday. A week from today is October. Baseball today. Baseball, Jerry. Baseball. You making wisecracks in a nightclub? He was in Tannenism. Game six. We've got... I know you probably never figured that with us. We've got a... what's it called? A radio program planned for you. And this radio... thing that... we're insisting on that we continue to do every day during the week from 3 to 6. Believe me, we're looking at alternatives. Includes Rob Mosley, editor-in-chief, GoDucks.com, bottom of the 4 o'clock hour. We've got a what are you doing? You know, this is one of those days, and as you might imagine, sometimes it's like we can only pick three. Today was one of those days. I had two, bing, bang, and then I was like, I was on ESPN, I was on the Fox site, I was on non-sports sites, I was on USA Today, because their sports section just really branches out, and you could wind up, you know, in some high school town covering tiddlywinks or something, or wrestling or some other sport. Then one hit me, so I've got my three, Nick has his three. The Philadelphia Phillies, after an offseason where they made two of the most substantial acquisitions for their ball squad, Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto, were eliminated from the postseason.
I'm not going to be here.
The Nats put them away, iced them. One of the things that I'm always sure of following sports, there are exceptions, and it's usually kind of a barring injury thing, is that I need to remember to turn my phone down when I sign on, because I've been trying to set up interviews and stuff today.
It's a radio program, Steve. We need the sound professional. As much as we're not professional, it's sound.
The two guys who've been known to react to the TV on the radio, all of a sudden we're worried about sounding professional. When you think you're sure you're not, you may have heard me refer to gambling stories about what we refer to as a trick bag game, where it's like, oh, God, those two teams are going to score like a million points. And it winds up 20. Actually, what it winds up is Auburn, Oregon, for the national title in 2011. I actually think the cover of Sports Illustrated mentioned expect a shootout, and the over-under in that game was in like the high 60s. It didn't even come close. But Nick and I sat here. The brain power and the analysis we wasted. Remember, we were trying to get the National League wild card down to like 9 teams.
Correct.
And there was going to be a play-in to see who got to be in the play-in, and then they squared against it. Then we'd need like a week, and it's like, well, that's that. There's two teams.
I wanted MLB to have to make a bracket that led into their final October bracket, and I didn't want October baseball to start until like the 15th because of all of the games that needed to be played and the scheduling that would have to be messed with. I wanted the World Series to start closer to Thanksgiving. I just let everybody play a play-in game and some sort of weird bracket going on, and no, we're not going to get it. We might get one in the American League, which is very cool.
Like maybe.
A game 163 or a play-in to a play-in, going to be super intense. I'm absolutely watching it. But we're only getting one, and not even out of the division that or the conf, whatever it's called, that the league that I wanted it from. Ugh. There's a disappointment. There's a huge disappointment in baseball. And we need to fire Larry Scott because of it.
It also goes to show you, when they talk about the dog days and a war of attrition, man, baseball has a tendency to just be the great equalizer. Because how you're sitting that last week in August, that's like the beginning of the dog days. July a little bit, but you get the All-Star break. And all of a sudden, you get from about July 12th or 13th, then you play 5 weeks, and it's like 6 more weeks of playing almost every day with this crappy staff and who's getting injured and who's not panning out and the weather and the heat and people get crabby and it's hard to focus. And then there were, in essence, what we have now are 13 teams really vying for 12 spots. I mean, we've got 4 division winners, and even in the Central, it would be different if Milwaukee was chasing the Cardinals because Milwaukee was chasing the Cardinals, right? Because the Cubbies fell out of it. The Cubbies were the one. Well, they're only 3 out, but they play St. Louis 7 times. Yeah, but nobody told you to lose all 4 to the Cards. And by the way, I think we had another first. It had to do with a team in contention the last 2 weeks. They lost 5 straight 1-run games. You know, we always joke around, and it's a great call that you hear at the beginning of our Eugene Ems coverage, where Harry Carey announces, "Cubs win! Cubs win! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!" Does he? Does she? Does whoever is responsible for all this? It's a one-off over now 111 years. I'm not so sure the late, great Harry Carey was completely accurate with that statement. So, actually, there is no SOA, and so it goes. Oregon on a bye. First, my personal, Nikola attests to the fact I'm standing. I give a standing ovation bye week. I love bye week. Now, if I were what I call a civilian, bye week, eh, it's crappy. Never was a big fan of it. I always see the value, but even though this job is awesome, and like I always say, anybody that costs me this job and forces me to work for a living, oh, you're going to have issues. I'll make phone calls.
What if it's you that does
Well, then
that?
I'm a moron and I deserve it.
Because I could see you getting up every morning, like you start working some job and they put you on the night shift and you're waking, like your sleep schedule is off. You can't watch sports because you're sleeping and you can't watch sports at night because you're working. And you just, every night you're like coming home from work or in the early morning and you're looking at yourself in the mirror and like, you did this to me.
It
was your fault.
And then let me tell you something. My crabbiness would spill over. I'd have my wife turn on me, my kids, their spouses, my grandkids would be like, all of a sudden it's like, sit down, we need to talk, which is never good. Any chance you can get back your old radio job? Because we liked you a lot more back then. This guy, not so much.
You're just going to game plan working your new future employer to taking you back here. Just be, take him!
Anything.
Drop you off with a bottle of wine and a basket at the front door of our offices and just be like, give them back.
Whatever, we'll chip in. We're doing a GoFundMe. It's gone national. This is no good for anybody. All right, anyway, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. So it's awesome doing this because if I bring up a subject, not only do Nick and I discuss it, if you call in, you know, the many people who are generous enough to spend their time as guests on the show, and, you know, it could be text, it could be on Twitter. Most of the people in my personal orbit, like family and friends, are not on Twitter. And, you know, so I'll have a conversation and they'll complain about their fill in the blank, college football team, college basketball team, NFL team, MLB team. And of course, frequently it's the Ducks, it's the New York teams, and even a lot of the Seattle and the Bay Area teams, because a lot of the people I met out here, are from the West Coast. And, you know, my friends and family from growing up are on the East Coast. And I'm like, I always try to explain to them, because when I talk to my dad, when I talk to some of my buddies from high school and college and that I worked with early on in my 20s, that they assume I'm still in that New York bubble. So they'll be, I'm like, you do understand, even though it's a really big bubble and it's a several million people, there's still a couple hundred million people who are like, yeah, that's not that big a deal. You're not really suffering a lot. You don't really have that many problems. Because I'm not kidding. Yankee fans complaining. You know, it's been 10 years, and in the history,
that's the thing that got me about Mraz last week when the Yankees won the division, and like MLB on Instagram was like posting like their story was just like you couldn't even see the dots of it. It just looked like a line, and it was just celebration videos and the Yankees and posts about the Yankees and how great it is. And it's like they're like, yeah, the second best team in the American League. They won the division. It's pretty expected. Why are we acting like, oh, it's been 3 years
since MLB.
They won the division?
Was MLB.
But even Mraz was just like, this is a crown day achievement for the Yankees. It's been 3 years too long since they've won the division.
Well, that's insane.
Right, and then I'm like, well, you are a Yankee fan. You have seen your team win multiple championships in your lifetime. Do you realize that if you were born 20 miles farther away, you would have been rooting for the Mets your entire life and have been disappointed with everything in your entire life and would die for a division crown? Like, just, whoa, calm down a
little
bit.
Not only are you right, but you're leaving out ammunition, because my generation grew up when they were garbage. Then they got good. Oh, yeah. Think about it. When I started to follow in 1965, they didn't even contend for 10 years, which is like unheard of at the time, because from the Ruth era up until the year before I started kindergarten, they didn't win the pennant like four times. So for somebody like Mraz, who was born in the 80s, that was their longest drought. They won it in 78, got in 81, didn't even make the playoffs till 95, 14 years. And since then, I think their longest drought of not getting in has been like 2 years. So if a Yankee fan, 40 and under, complains, it should be the one time assault is legal. Another fan should be like, no. And pull out like some paperwork,
like a
that's
quick
been
slap
notarized.
Is that technically assault? Just,
yes.
You're just like, hey, wake
is.
Up.
Hey, if you throw a pie at a public figure, that's could be deemed assault. But it's like, and that actually is a perfect segue. It's like, at what point do you determine if a particular fan is just whining or if they actually, because to tell you the truth, right now, if you... And I understand the magnificence of Sabrina and Coach Graves and the women, and that the volleyball team played for a national title relatively recently. But when you think of, now remember, outside the Oregon bubble, national scope, if you think of a college program and how they're doing and the success level, who's kidding who? Most people think of football or men's basketball.
Yes.
So at this point, if you're an Oregon fan and you're acting like you've been through anything, it's like, okay, freeze. You just had a Heisman winner and played for a national title. I mean, yeah, if from 2009, 10, 11, 12, not in 13, even though you had a really good team, 14, you were always in a major bowl, and for most of the season for a national title consideration, yeah, the people from Cal and Purdue and most of the other programs around the country. I don't know why I always default to Purdue. It's, as a matter of fact,
you've been calling them Purdue your entire life, and it's just like failure, Purdue. Yeah, I got it.
That's
okay,
actually since I've been here.
Most of your life.
So I was trying to think of the parameters. I believe are different. If you have not played for a national title in basketball or football, but you've made a Final Four, you've won your conference a few times. And for example, if you're a Big Ten fan or a Pac-12 fan, you played in the Rose Bowl. If you know, you're from SEC country, you played in the Sugar Bowl. If you're from an ACC fan, you played in the Orange Bowl. And the tie into the Big 12, as well. You know, I'm sorry, I know that X amount of fan bases haven't been in the national title picture, been close, but if you're a regular in the Elite Eight and you've made a final, if you made a Final Four, it's like, yeah, we don't want to hear about you. So, like, for example, if a Washington or a USC or an Oregon fan is, you know, calling the wambulance, an Arizona fan is like, so people have gotten away with murder, right? Because it's a never. It's not a rarity. It's a never. For Oregon State, the last time they were in the conference picture was 08. When they hosted Oregon to get to the Rose Bowl. And at the time, I think it was the biggest dismantling in the history of the Civil War in 2008. Oregon State fans, call me 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Text me 321-0824 or tweet at me at SportsTalk953. Share of the title in 2000, not playing in the Rose Bowl, but playing in the Fiesta Bowl. Because prior to that, it was 35 years. It was 36 seasons, 35 years in January of 1965. So to remember Oregon State in the Rose Bowl, you have to be at least 7 or 8 years older than me, so mid-60s. So most fans are like, yeah. And plus, you know, it was a bit of a big difference. What are you OMGing about?
Well, I went.
There's a lot of blank. There's a lot of white on the right, isn't there? Well, I know. Are you looking at the Sports Reference site?
Yeah, I'm looking at Oregon State's the program history, whatever. I'm like, okay, Rose Bowl, they lost that, you know, finished the season ranked 8th overall. They were in the AAWU. What did they do? And then nothing. 1999, yeah. The Oahu Classic. Wow. That's just, like, the only things of note for, you know, like, almost over 30 years is their record was adjusted 2 wins better in a couple of seasons. That's incredible.
Well, if you want to talk about where the bar is set, so NFL people looked at the 1998 Oregon State team that beat a really good Duck team to push their record to 5-6. And the Spanos family decided Mike Riley is our guy moving forward to get an NFL job. No, seriously. They thought, well, if he could make a move in that conference with a program that to most didn't exist, it wasn't on the map because they hadn't been to a bowl game since the 1965 Rose Bowl. I mean, and then unfortunately for Coach Riley, he was awarded Ryan Leaf. In his bad days, that was really bad timing.
The Beavers had 9 seasons with 1 win or less. They had an over. Oh, man.
Oh, no. When I got here, people were asking me, what did you? And I was like, I'm standing here before you telling you in 1990, I can't name one Oregon State football player. I don't think at the time. And they were like, well, there was a Heisman winner. It's like, I recognize his name just because I've seen the list of Heisman winners. I had no idea he was from Oregon State. And by the way, I probably could have told you Fouts was from Oregon and Mel Renfro. So when you consider, I didn't know the difference between a duck and a beaver until I agreed to come out here. I mean, there was not, I could honestly say it might have been one or two times growing up prior to the 1989 Independence Bowl. I don't know that an Oregon game was ever on my TV. Wow. Well, think about it. Oregon State was. Why? They made the tournament under Ralph Miller many times. They always got beat in the first round in heartbreaking fashion on a jumper by Rolando Blackman of Kansas State. But, I mean, I remember seeing them like in a bracket. Oregon hadn't been to the tournament since either 61 or 62. You know, I was one. I did terrible at my brackets back then.
Back then, you still do. You're still not
actually, I probably, who's kidding who? I filled out a good bracket in 82 and 2000, and I've pretty much been in the toilet ever since. But if you look at this conference, I mean, what would you establish the parameters as far as the programs in this conference, and now you got to include Utah and Colorado, even though the Utes have really had their moments of glory in a different league. 2004 with Suburban Meyer and Alex Smith when they went unbeaten and beat, who was the Big East winner that year? Pitt. Although Pitt wasn't a very good team. I think they were 8-4. But then you had the magical 2008 season with a Brian Johnson at quarterback for the Utes, where they went unbeaten and kind of spanked the crap out of Alabama, who was year two under Saban and on the brink of this. You know, they've won 5 out of the last 10, and they've been in it two other times. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We've got What Are You Doing to wrap up crunch time, some worthy contenders. There's more I wanted to talk about as far as what went on in this conference over the weekend. And, of course, now we've got a big NFL Week 3 recap to get to, because it's all in the books. Did we think Washington was going to be this bad or just not really a contender? Or, who knows? Jury was kind of out on Philly. Was Dallas going to be that good? Nobody had any expectations. Nobody reasonably thought Washington was going to contend in the East, but they look like they could be in that conversation right now where whoever emerges, Herbert or Tua or whatever great players emerge, and we have to find the catchphrase to suck or stink or for whatever for that player. I don't know if I had Washington etched in there, but in no scenario did I have him in the playoffs. Also, I don't think in any scenario did I think they'd be 3-13 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for me, the NFC East was always going to be Dallas and Philly, and they were just going to battle it out.
Yeah, I think I'm on board with
that. The Giants definitely were, you know, they're 2 years away from being a year away, and Washington were either going to be playing a rookie quarterback with no wide receivers or relying on an incredibly old Adrian Peterson to somehow reignite their running game, because they once again lost Darius Geis for the season, whom they drafted 2 years ago, and he's yet to play. I think he's played in one game now. He's going to miss two seasons and have played in one game.
Yeah, your 34-year-old running back, I don't care how much of a marvel he was, you got to be out of your gourd to think Adrian Peterson can shoulder anything beyond a minimal burden. And you've already seen he's a 34-year-old running back who's had knee surgery and taken a pounding like that. Case Keenum at quarterback, he's more of a moments guy than anybody I would trust all too much over. And when you see his numbers, it's also really important to understand that they did nothing but throw the ball in the second half of the Eagles, Cowboys, and Bears game. So he's been putting it up a lot in his he's not Washington State attempts, but he's averaged like 42 attempts a game, even in the modern day NFL. That's a lot of chucking. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. That brings us to our first break. We'll do that. We'll come back. We'll have an update, and we'll move it along with more crunch time. 95.3 The Score.
This is Connor. Ball's out. Who's got it? 49ers have it. Well, Armstead with relentless pursuit from the backside. He's able to knock it loose before Connor's knee hits the ground. Buckner there to pick it up.
By the way, did you hear those names? Very subtle. Very subtle. Huge defensive play. The strip by... That was in the San Francisco-Pittsburgh game. The strip by Arik Armstead, the fumble recovery by DeForest Buckner, turning play in the game as Frisco beats the Steelers, and Garoppolo to Dante Pettis cashes in, and San Fran and LA now tied atop the West at 3-0. I think most people assumed or figured or logically deducted that LA would be there. The Niners? I would say no. But, well, first of all, when most people saw this game on the schedule, they thought they'd be playing the Pittsburgh Steelers with their Hall of Fame quarterback. And, well, obviously they didn't think they would have Antonio Brown. But on the road, home for that win. San Francisco's defense looks good. And they play the same team as Oregon this week, BYE, before an interesting game against the Browns. And then they're at the Rams. Good chance first place in the West will be on the line. San Francisco, by the way, ends the season. We're pretty sure Drew Brees is coming back. I mean, they're what, 6 weeks or so?
Yeah.
So,
he's probably going to come back after their bye and then torch the Falcons in week 10 for like 500 yards and five touchdowns. Just like okay. That's absolutely what's going to happen. Just with the way the Falcons season is going and the Falcons as a franchise, yeah, Drew Brees is going to have a career day for Drew Brees when he comes back from this hand.
That's saying a lot.
I know. It's going to happen.
Because I really didn't consider San Francisco anything of a threat, and I'm not saying they are, Tampa, Cincinnati, a Roethlisberger-less, he's not meatless, Pittsburgh team, but their last six games, Packers at Baltimore, at New Orleans, Atlanta home, Rams home, at Seahawks. Yeah, they better beat, like, Washington and Carolina and Arizona twice and the land of Cleves if, I don't know how realistic San Francisco fans thought. Well, the thing, if you're a San Francisco fan, I guess you're more of a why not person because you had no idea what they are a full season with Garoppolo. And if you made that kind of investment in them, despite like eight passes coming into this season, who the hell knows?
I mean, yeah, they looked really good after they traded for him, and then they were fine until he tore his ACL, and then everything went kind of kaput. But the NFC West is like sneakily like an extremely competent, like tough division to be in. If the Rams are the Rams, if Seattle's got their defense kind of lined up and they kind of figure out what to do on offense with the, you know, rolling gates of offensive linemen that they have, or toll gates, what a pinwheel, pin styles, whatever. They have a bad offensive line. And then Arizona, like with their air raid offense, is just crazy weird too. And then you've got the Niners who are loaded on defense and have, you know, a talented mind running their offense with Shanahan, but not a lot of people to throw the ball to. They're riddled with injury. It's weird. All of these divisions are just weird because you can kind of see after 3 weeks, you know who the, you know, really bad teams are, but everybody else is stuck in the middle and you're just really not sure what's going to happen quite yet.
I saw an interesting debate. I'll tell you, it was so long ago.
Turnstiles.
Pinwheels?
Yeah, I said pinwheels.
I'll tell you what, I got 2 months' pay if I could see a fan base go through pinwheels to get into a game. I am in. I will give you my Venmo account. Just like, zoing, doing, doing. Section A, zoing. Section C, zoing.
Just all the gate attendants have little pinwheels and they spin one every time somebody comes in. And you're in, and you're in, and you're in.
That thought in my head is just bringing me glee. So it was so long ago that like the lead analysts on ESPN's NFL countdown were still TJ and Boomer. And the debate was, and it was like three or four games. After three or four games, when do you get a good read on a team or kind of how a season plays itself out? And it doesn't matter who was on either side, but I'm like, I think you start to get a first taste after 3 weeks. But a quarter poll matters. In baseball, I mean, you know, we've seen, was it Toronto in it at the quarter poll and a couple other teams who have since just gone by the wayside?
The Mariners had like three losses at the quarter poll this year.
Right, right. The Mariners were thinking about October. Now they're fearing October. But you have your constants. I mean, we knew the Pats. I'll tell you the truth. The Rams I had as a lock, KC as a lock. And when I say a lock, I don't mean to win a Super Bowl. It's like if this team got into the final month of the season and they were like out of it for a playoff, that meant something devastatingly horrible happened. And my logic with Washington, New York, and Wentz being Balsa Wood Jones, I really would have been surprised if Dallas wasn't in the picture as well. I'll tell you, what's so funny?
Balsa Wood Jones.
Well, he's so good. He's so breakable. It's ridiculous.
What does that make Daniel Jones? Is he just the Jones of all Jones?
We'll see after he takes a couple of licks. If he keeps on ticking, he doesn't get a bad injury nickname.
Well, no, I just like a nickname in general. It's just like that guy is, you know, he's blah, blah, blah Jones. But if you just say he's Daniel Jones, what does the Daniel part of that imply then? Is it just like...
Right. No, I don't know.
There's no definition.
It's an Elton John song. Okay. It means he's leaving tonight on a plane. So I mentioned earlier the New York bubble. And my dad, who is born in 1935, so he's going to be 84, and knock on wood, he's in great shape, but, you know, that's an old person. So when he hears certain things on New York radio, he doesn't listen to ESPN, he doesn't listen to CBS Sports, he listens to WFAN and then the news stations in town. So, obviously, yesterday... on New York sports radio, as you might imagine, there was a significant buzz surrounding the New York football Giants. So first he sends me a text in the morning. Remember, your aunt's birthday is tomorrow. She's turning 89. So I called my Aunt Dee, got that done. And so I'm on the air, but I didn't check my phone. So as I'm walking out of here a little bit after 6, and he doesn't even explain. I heard this. He just, why do they call him Danny Dimes? And Nick could attest to the fact I'm literally reading the text off my phone right now. And so I explain that a great pass is known as dropping a dime, and then I tag it with, it applies to both football and basketball. And he just texts back, thanks. So obviously, he's listening to WFAN, and people were probably just referring to him. So Danny Dimes, and the pass he threw to Shepard, and just on and on and on. And he's probably like...
Danny Dimes, he's out there throwing spirals. Eli's never thrown a spiral in his life. I'm telling you, look at that guy. He's moving around out there. He's going to lead the league in rushing, that Danny Dimes. You see him run? He can actually move as a quarterback who can run. Danny Dimes, I'm telling you.
Danny Wheels is going to be his new moniker, because he's clearly a better runner than Randall Cunningham, Vic, and Cam Newton combined.
I mean, there are statues that are more mobile than Eli Manning in the pocket. Like, of course.
Could there be a bigger contrast?
No.
Seriously, who's the most statuesque pocket passer that we've seen?
Tom Brady.
Is it Brady?
Brady will.
Is it safe to say that they're just that category of the Mannings and Brady that just, they're not moving?
Yeah, no, they just, you know, Brady would, I mean, earlier, keep a lot of stuff under center, he'd drop back, he'd be back there, but he's just standing in the pocket and he's falling over before anybody hits him, because if he actually gets hit, like, that's what's going to cause an injury. It's why he's going to play until he's 67. The Mannings did the same thing. It's, okay, we're going to stand in the pocket, we're going to wait, and we're going to find our reads, we're going to throw a ball into a tight window, we don't care if it gets intercepted, because we're making the right read, we're the Mannings, we run the NFL, and we're going to fall over if somebody gets close to us. And that's just all they do. So with Daniel, you know, Danny Dimes being able to move, it makes him look so much better, because it's literally like the one thing Eli Manning can't do. Gee, I thought it was so weird when he rushed for the first touchdown, not the ended up like game winning touchdown, but it was Tiki Aronde was like, and that's the perks of having a running quarterback. I was like, no, that's the perk of having a quarterback that can run, not a running quarterback.
Totally. Agree. That's and there absolutely is a difference. That could be elusive. That if the protection breaks down, it's not over. Eli took those sacks where the give up sack, where he just, I'm down.
Yeah,
or he just bounced it.
Yeah, the pocket came around me. I'm now in a circle surrounded by people who want to flatten me. I'm just going to go ahead and cut out the middleman here. I'm just going to fall to the ground, so all they have to do is touch me. And then we'll call it there. But, like, Big Ben, Phil Rivers, Matt Ryan, all of those guys are, you know, kind of older quarterbacks that are less mobile. But even then, you'll see them like bounce around and they'll get outside or they'll take off for a first down.
Extend plays, right. I believe, is what you're looking
and
for.
And Eli Manning just would not do it. He would just fall over. Just, well, I'm done. I don't
Although,
want to be here.
He did make one of the great escapes ever.
I think that was his one. Like, he has one rushing touchdown. He's
hey,
like,
if you're going to make one.
Right. He's like, why would I ever try and extend a play again? Because it's never going to be as good as that time I extended the play.
All right. 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, normally during the early part of a show, you guys chime in on a bunch of things. Yeah. I never opened up the text line. Oh, 321. 0824. My bad. I'll get to you guys. You could also hit us up on Twitter at 953 the score for the station. At Sports Talk 953 for yours truly. Somebody said Dan Marino, not exactly fleet of foot. But with guys like Marino, while he was vulnerable if the pocket collapsed, he had just such a strong arm and a quick release. He avoided trouble like that. I mean, there have been a lot of quality quarterbacks who got rid of the ball to avoid trouble. Marino was really one of those guys who'd be like, they got him. How the hell did he throw that ball 17 yards downfield on a rope for a first down? I mean, it would be if he just threw it away to avoid the sack would be one thing, but that guy just... I'd be kind of curious if you took quarterbacks and you just kind of found a way to make their feet stationary where they can only use their arm. They could decide whether they're flat-footed, whether, you know, their left shoulder is facing downfield, whatever way is comfortable, because that guy, Fouts had a pretty strong arm like that. Obviously, Elway, even though he was mobile, I mean, when that guy set and fired, I mean, who was the guys like Vance Johnson, they would be like, yeah, by the end of the year, I had one broken finger, two sprains, and you'd always see those guys with their fingers taped. It was like, his 12-yard passes were like if somebody stood next to you and punched your hands. So,
have you seen that photo? It was all over Sports Illustrated last week of Calvin Johnson's hands. He has one of his ring fingers is almost bent out at like a 90-degree angle, and he was catching passes from absolutely nobodies like John Kitna in the NFL, who are not known for throwing rockets for footballs, and his hands look that bad. I can't even imagine, like, regularly catching passes from a guy who's just throwing, you know, footballs 100 miles an hour, and he's just like, yeah, catch it, because I can. I'm going to throw this hard so that the defense can't get it, and I better hope that you're drinking a ton of milk so that your fingers don't break.
Calcium.
Yeah.
You need a calcium break.
Strong
here.
Bones, man.
All right, before we take a break, I want to remind you that the Tap and Growler announcing its annual Fresh Hop Invitational, September 30th through October 6th. The Pacific Northwest, of course, grows some flavorful hops, and every year around this time, Tap and Growler showcases their fresh hop brews. They host a blind taste-off, and this year there's going to be 10 local and regional breweries. They've been invited to enter their best fresh hop creation. We'll get you the details as next week approaches. And Beer Garden, their Oktoberfest is still going strong through October 6th. That's a week from this Sunday. As always, with the triumvirate of them, be it the place in Springfield, Public House, all of them. Check them out on Facebook, like them on Facebook, follow on Twitter, online, publichousehub.com, beergardenme.com, tappinggrowler.com, the Tap and Growler, stay or growl. All right, that brings us to break time. We'll do that. We'll come back. Since it's Tuesday, the final segment of Crunch Time means...
What are you doing?
Next, 95.3 The Score.
Right center, a two-out RBI hit. Ryan Zimmerman, his 26th batted in, and a huge run puts the Nats up by two. Rowdy Reed takes ball three, and it goes back to the screen, and the Nats lead by three.
Yeah, that was today. That's a day-night doubleheader. The Nats took the first of two from Philly, 4-1, as they look to cement their place as the host of the wild card game, most likely against the Brewers. All right, we welcome you back to a Crunch Time. 95.3 The Score. It's that time on a Tuesday when we wrap Crunch Time with several questions all framed the exact same way. It's not quite the five Q's of journalism. It's more one. It's called, What Are You Doing? And Nick leads off.
To Bruce Arians, I ask.
What are you doing?
Everyone spent a lot of time talking about last week's Tampa-New York game because of Daniel Jones, and yes, he's more mobile than Eli Manning. He's rushed for more touchdowns in one game than Manning ever has, but like I said, the majority of statues are more mobile in the pocket than Eli Manning. Let's get over it, people. The big loser in this game was not only the Buccaneers as a team, but Bruce Arians. You see, Mike Evans took off down the field, caught a fantastic 44-yard catch, and had the Bucs set up at the 9-yard line. It's a very simple formula here. You've got a timeout to use, you spike the ball to kill the clock, you take a knee in the middle of the field, you call a timeout, you kick a 27-yard field goal to beat the woeful Giants. Ha ha, Tampa Bay wins. Except for some reason, Bruce Arians, an experienced NFL head coach who's been around football for his entire life, took a delay of game penalty, because any time that you can take a 27-yard field goal and make it a 36-yard field goal, you always do that. I mean, you always take your franchise's eighth kicker in 8 years to make the pressure on them that much higher by taking a penalty to make them farther away from the goalposts. What are you thinking? When does ever taking a delay of game penalty ever make sense? And you're defending it by saying it makes it more makeable because you can see more and you're farther. It's just wrong, man. The kick that moved in the air just wide right would have been good from 27, and you tossed away for a very winnable game for 5 yards. 5 yards, as I ask.
What are you doing?
To the Times Hours podcast, courtesy of the Athletic Kansas City, I ask.
What are you doing?
That's deep. They sent out one of those fanboy, idiotic, self-serving tweets. Please, please, look at me. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs is terrific. He's one of my favorite players to watch in all sports. He's not quite ready for a bust in Canton. So they tweet out something along the lines of the amount of touchdown passes he's thrown in comparison to Hall of Famer and three-time Super Bowl champion Troy Aikman. For openers, the comparison of generations, this separated reveals an ignorance and complete lack of understanding of how different the NFL is now when held up against the mirror of the 1990s. Not to mention, the goal of those Cowboy teams, win the championship. They didn't need Aikman to sling it a billion times for 80 million yards, and Troy had a great response. Call me when he has 33% of my Super Bowl titles. Well done by eight, as we ask.
What are you doing?
To the Washington football franchise, I ask.
What are you doing?
Of all of the ways that this could go, it could be about their team, the owner, their name, their field, all of it. It actually goes out to the on-field hydration team, I guess you could say, for Washington. We've all seen those Gatorade buckets on the sideline filled with that hydrating, sweet deliciousness on the sideline of football fields. It could be water, Gatorade, whatever, coffee. Who knows? That's the magic of it being the orange bucket. And for some reason, for some incredible reason, the ESPN crew last night was zooming in on Washington coach Jay Gruden as Booger McFarland talked very openly about how Gruden's time with Washington was going to come to an abrupt end, but it was just as shocking as a statement to come from the booth as anything, and nobody heard it because all they cared about was a Washington staff member stirring said Gatorade with a stack of cups. That's right, this guy pops the top off the Gatorade thing, takes all a huge sleeve of cups that are still in their wrap, and then just started stirring it. I don't know why. Why does the Gatorade need to be served? Is it like a powder mixture that needed to be mixed in and you're just kind of double checking? Was he actually making a stew? I don't understand. Also, why a stack of cups? Washington, despite all of their flaws, they are a billion-dollar NFL franchise. No one can find a spoon? You don't have anyone who can run up to the cooking staff and ask for a ladle? Does everyone use cups instead of spoons in the NFL on the sideline? What is going on here, as I ask?
What are you doing?
To the state newspaper of South Carolina, I ask.
What are you doing?
They had to issue an apology after just this rotten headline. It followed South Carolina's loss in their SEC opener at Missouri, where they got thumped 34-14. So understand, The Gamecock quarterback is Ryan Helinski. If the name sounds familiar, he's the brother of former Washington State quarterback Tyler Helinski, who tragically took his own life in January of last year. In the aftermath of that devastation, the family began a foundation called Helinski's Hope to fund programs that help educate, advocate, and destigmatize mental illness across the country. So remember, the name of the foundation, Helinski's Hope, the headline, because they lost, Helinski Hope Sinks. Oh. Helinski Hope Sinks. The apology, called it an error in the editing process, claimed it was unintentional, and they've reached out to the university and the family. Subscriptions are being canceled. Folks are taking their subscription money and donating it to the foundation. So to the state newspaper, I ask.
What are you doing?
That's,
wow,
not good. To Houston Cougars quarterback Za'Eric King, I ask.
What are you doing?
Quite literally, what are you doing? Like, I'm all for players having the power to choose to be where they want to be, play where they want to play and all that, but I actually don't get what King is doing here. Yesterday it was reported that King, from his father, was going to redshirt the rest of the season at Houston and enter the transfer portal, leaving Houston. Fine, I get that. You can look at all of the other success stories that kids have had with transfers over the last couple of years. What I don't get is that right after that information was released, he then released a statement saying that he wanted to stay at Houston, and playing at Houston is why he came to Houston, and that the reports he was leaving were fake news, and he called his dad fake news. It doesn't make any sense. Why would you say all of that but then not play for Houston? I mean, allegedly it gives him the power to actually see if any quarterbacks leave early for the NFL, where he could fit in, go to a Power 5 conference, all that, or just sit an extra year because? I don't get it. I'm confused, as I ask.
What are you doing?
The last one is to Planet NFL, I ask.
What are you doing?
You know, I love the Lebertard show, but they played a montage of all the experts from their network to Cowherd to CBS to Fox giving their opinion on when Daniel Jones was drafted. And by the way, I did it myself, so there's no I told you so, or I guess Dave Gettleman and the G-Men got it right or wrong. He's got four quarters under his belt against a team I'm guessing doesn't wind up in the Super Bowl. Tampa's horrible, and it's no better than a guy I love, Ryan Clark, who said, if Trubisky doesn't play better before last night, he's risking being another Ryan Leaf or Jamarcus Russell. It's like, these guys, they got this job. They're really good at it. Why does right now have to determine history after a year and a game? By the way, Trubisky's already won a divisional title. I think that might separate him from Leaf and Jamarcus, and he was within a double doink of making it to the Elite Eight. But back to Jones. We really need to make this determination now? That's ridiculous. So to NFL overreactors in a nuclear way, I ask.
What are you doing?
Good God. And by the way, I'm on record that I thought Gettleman picking him was insane. It didn't make any sense, and it was wrong. In sports, guys make the Hall of Fame when they fail like 65% of the time in baseball and like half the time in basketball. Wrong is okay. We'll take a break. We'll be back. Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.